Penguin Random House Audio presents Ravencry, The Raven's Mark, Book 2, by Ed MacDonald. Read for you by Colin Mace. Blackwing, What Has Gone Before. The Nameless and the Deep Kings have been at war for longer than anyone remembers. The Deep Kings seek to enslave humanity and turn them into drudge. Enslaved, deformed creatures that worship them. The Nameless, cruel and caring only for the final victory, stand in their way. It has been 80 years since Crowfoot unleashed the Heart of the Void against the approaching enemy forces, and, in doing so, created the Misery. A toxic, mystic wasteland, where ghosts walk and mutated creatures scavenge the sands, and neither distance nor direction are ever quite what they seem. It can only be navigated by specialists, taking readings from the three moons. Ryholt Galharrow is a Blackwing captain, magically bound to serve Crowfoot, one of the Nameless, and charged with rooting out dissenters, traitors, and spies. On a mission to save Ezabeth Tanzer, a spinner, able to manipulate light energy into magic, a woman he'd loved and lost 20 years before, from drudge attack, they made a terrible discovery. That Nall's engine, the weapon that protects the Misery's border, was unpowered, allowing the Deep Kings to bring their vast armies to bear in their war against the Nameless. Together, Galharrow and Ezabeth, along with a swordswoman, Nen, a navigator, Tanotta, and Ezabeth's brother, Count Dantry, uncovered a web of conspiracy that led to the very top. Prince Hirono was being manipulated by Shavada, one of the Deep Kings, and though Galharrow defeated the prince, it was too late. Nall's engine had failed, and the drudge were on the march. In a desperate fight, they found the secret that allowed the Nameless to defeat King Shavada and save the city, but not without cost. In saving the city, Ezabeth was destroyed. Now rumors abound of a ghost that lingers in the light network. A spirit seldom seen. Chapter 1. Levin Ost's note insisted I come alone. The clocks were poised to strike 4 as I approached the meeting point. The night carried a purplish cast, Ryoke and Cladder both waxing, unobscured by cloud. I stepped briskly through the winter cold, hooded, armed, alert. The last time I'd met Levin Ost, he'd tried to shank me with a broken bottle. But that had been a long time ago, and truth be told, I'd probably deserved it. The smell of the canal met me 3 streets before it came into view. The waterway was blacker than oil, the streets around it mostly deserted. Nobody wanted to live near that stench. Valengrad's canals had never been fit for swimming in, but after the siege we tossed all the dead drudge into the canals to rot. Bad magic isn't so easily washed away, though, and the pollutants had stained even the water. 4 years later, it still bore the memory. Ost wanted to meet on a barge docked along Canal 6. It was an old waterway on the western edge of Valengrad, out past the stacked rows of soldiers' tenements. I passed barges loaded with cut stone, floated south for the ceaseless construction work on an immense foss mill being built in the spills. Hundreds of tons of masonry sat low on the reeking water, waiting to become part of the grand spire. Canal 6 wasn't one of the worst, but the stench still forced itself all the way to the back of my throat. I paused in the deep shadows at the street corner. Narrow boats and barges were moored against the banks, cargoes lashed down tight. We'd suffered 2 quakes in the past week, and nobody wanted to fish spilled stone out of the polluted water. I watched silently from the shadows, let the minutes tick by. No need to be impatient. Nothing moved on the black water. The light tubes were dim, humming low. No sign of anyone on the decks, and the barges were dark, empty by night, with only a single cabin window giving light. It had been a pleasure barge once, but hauled cargo through the indignity of its retirement. 40 feet long, bare deck. An odd place to lay a trap, if that's what this turned out to be. I shifted the gear beneath my coat. But if you walk into a trap, it rarely matters if you're armed. It was Ost's name, our old association, that had brought me out here alone. My recruits would scowl and gripe if they saw me abandon the caution that I drilled into them. But the rules were for them, not for me. I placed a hand beneath my coat, cocked the hammer on a flintlock pistol. Ost! The black water took my words, flattened them. A shadow appeared against the grime-encrusted glass. A bolt grated as it was drawn back, and then the cabin door opened. A gnarled and narrow figure was silhouetted against the cabin light.
Captain Calero,
a gruff smoker's voice asked.
That's what they call you now, isn't it? Wasn't sure you'd come.
Levin Ost looked like he'd been on lean rations for a year and then tumbled down a hillside, maybe more than once. He had an untidy, clubbed-together shape to his body, muscle slowly losing the battle with age. His beard was long, the color of ashes, but his eyes were still keen. His face had a peppering of circular scars where he'd suffered from misery worm.
It's good to see you, Levin, I said, although it wasn't.
Come in, letting the heat out, he said.
And by the way he swayed as he turned, I figured he was drunk. I had plenty of experience with drunks. He didn't look much like a threat. If he'd invited me here to end what his broken glass assault had started all those years ago, he'd prepared badly. I eased the pistol lock slowly back to rest, though I didn't take my thumb from it altogether as I climbed aboard. Unlike the cargo boats filling most of the docks, the barge had been a luxury river cruiser once, the kind the nobility spent dainty afternoons drifting about on. Then had come debts, boredom, or the blackening of the canals, and its owner had either sold it or turned it to shifting fruit up and down the waterways to cut a profit.
Any crew aboard? I asked.
No.
The cabin was a simple room, 12 by 12 with a few worn chairs and an old-fashioned oil lamp hanging from a hook in the ceiling. Ost offered me a seat. I didn't take it. He seemed unsure of himself, adjusted a few items on a simple table, a folio of papers and a bottle of wine, a vintage that spoke of neither wealth nor taste. An empty bottle stood beside it. Another lay on its side up against the wall. A basket-hilted broadsword lay scabbarded on the table. I didn't think that Ost intended to use it on me, but I wasn't worried if he tried. He was old, he was out of shape, and he was drunk.
It's been a long time, I said softly.
In the deep night, some primal fear of the dark makes us favour hushed tones.
Well, I suppose, Ost said. Haven't seen you since the day you fought Tarolo Mancono.
His voice had retained its self-assured roughness. He may have never held a rank above navigator, but that had still earned him respect and a place in the command tent. He'd never liked me, because he was common stock, and I'd been born with cream for blood, and in fairness, I'd been a cocky bastard. Still bitter about that? Ost shrugged.
I always liked Mancono, he said. He listened, even if he was born rich as a prince. You gave him a bad death, but I suppose you can't shoulder all the blame. He asked for the duel.
I hadn't come to relive the past or settle old grievances.
You said you had information vital to Valengrad's safety, I said.
Wine? Ost asked.
The cups on the table were smudged with fingerprints, so I probably shouldn't have, but I took one all the same. I'm not one to turn down a smudged cup of worst quality wine, no matter the hour or the situation. Ost looked over my uniform. He noted the long, close-fitting black coat that fell to my knees, with its dual rows of silver buttons. He noted the raised silver wings stitched to the sides of the shoulders. Once I'd sworn to never wear a uniform again, but time, money, and prestige make liars of us all, and this was a coat of my own color. I let him look as I drank, and waited for him to speak.
Looks like life's treating you.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?